started, so thank you everybody for coming. Who was here? Who was not here last night? Okay, all right. So this week I'm talking about the matters that matter, and we talked about last night as those being, you know, they're a little different for each of us, being those things that matter the very most to us, our guiding beliefs, principles, values. Some of those we share, others are going to be unique to us. And so we kind of laid the groundwork thinking about that. And over the course of the week, what I wanted to do is bring in some elements that help us look a little bit more deeply at that idea, and maybe some of the things that might get in our way of keeping us from living lives that are reflective of who we are and what we value. And for purposes of this tape, I completely forgot. My name is Molly Davis, and this is, we're here at Holden Village for Courage Matters. So today we're talking about courage, and when we think about those things that are most important, how does courage play into that? Why would we need courage when we think about those things that are the very most important to us? Why might we need courage to do that?
Well, they may not be things that are generally supported by the culture, and so it involves taking a stand. And
right. Yeah, absolutely. 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 What else?
Courage or lack of it drives your actions.
It does. Definitely. Yeah, it does. Mary?
I think that courage, the deepest desires live in the same neighborhood as the deepest fears. So if you find one, you can find the other.
Find the other. Yeah, and what I that's perfect, because courage does not mean the absence of fear. In fact, I think that fear is really an essential, if it's an essential, but it's definitely a truth in life. And so courage definitely does not mean the absence of fear. And when we think about those matters that matter, really what that requires is the courage to look at ourselves, our choices, our beliefs, our relationships, and tell ourselves the truth about our lives. And sometimes that can be scary. And yet the truth, really, you know, we've heard it said, it's what sets us free. So as we move through this, and especially this particular workshop, one of the things I'd like to encourage you to do, especially when we get to this exercise I'm going to take you through, is to set aside what I like to call, there's lots of names for it, your inner editor, your inner critic, but that voice that when you begin to contemplate a new idea or somebody suggests that you do something, instantly kicks in. And it says things like, that would never work, you'll look foolish. I don't have the time, the support, the energy, the money, the strength to do that. And as we're, oftentimes what I find is those ideas that bring up the most resistance and those ideas that are the most uncharacteristic are the ones that we need to look at the very most. So remembering that today as we go through this, this is an exercise, and just a chance to maybe look at some things a little bit differently. Recognize that it's an exercise, and you can walk out of here and do whatever you want with it. But while you're in here, be willing to write down, think about anything that would come to mind. So really work to set that inner critic aside. All right, so an American icon, John Wayne, said, courage is being scared to death and saddling up anyway. Courage is being scared to death and saddling up anyway. And we all know fear. It's a part of life. And there's a fear that's really essential. It's that fear that keeps us safe, tells us when to make a course correction, when to protect those that we love, when to run for cover. There's that kind of fear. There's also another kind of fear that stops us in our tracks. It keeps us from moving forward. It robs us of joy, of possibilities, of important changes, different decisions that we would make, and even exhilarating experiences that if we let fear direct us, we might not be able to experience. So how many of you have had a great creative idea at one time or another in your life? Just a great idea, you think, that is the greatest idea, nobody's ever thought of that. I'm going to change the world, I'm going to be famous, I'm going to make money, I'm going to be on Oprah, whatever it is. And I can remember years ago, last night I introduced the people that were here to my best friend and writing partner and business partner, her name's Christine, and we've been friends for about 35 years, she's my co-author, And over the years, we came up with a million creative ideas, partly because we wanted to spend more time together. And I think we thought if we could make our time together profitable, that we could have more of it. And so one of our great ideas really was that we thought of Starbucks before Starbucks thought of Starbucks. This was years ago, we were young moms, and we thought, we both loved coffee, still do. Wouldn't it be great to put coffee-to-go booths in Safeway parking lots all over the country? People would drive through, they'd get their coffee. We, of course, started sharing this idea with all the people that we cared about, who instantly said, where would you get the money to do that? You don't have time to do that. And they said, nobody will ever stop on their way to work for coffee. Oh my gosh, when Starbucks came out, it was like, okay, we are never buying coffee at that place. And so, you know, what happens is that those voices come in and they kill that creative idea and all of the enthusiasm that goes with it. And when we were writing letters to our daughters, or when we had this idea for this book, we had this very significant conversation. We were driving home from this weekend at the coast, and we started talking about fear and how fear had always stopped us in the past. And we made this pact. We said, from this point on with this project, we're going to do it differently, and it's going to take both of us. But when fear comes up, we're going to look at it, we're going to identify it, and then we are going to, like, grab hands, and as best we can, we're going to step over it and take one more step. And I'll tell you, there were days when I was the one who was terrified, and she'd say, it's okay, babe, trust me, come with me. There were days that I was the one that was helping her. But just the fact that we had that conversation about fear and that we were going to do it differently doesn't mean that it still doesn't happen every day. So when you think about just the physical feeling of fear, when your body's filled with fear, when you get afraid, how does it show up? What do you feel? What happens to you when you're afraid?
Constriction. Just kind of shut down.
Shut down, okay. What else?
Nauseous.
Nauseous. I'm with you on that one. What else?
Take a nap.
Take a nap. Does your heart pound, maybe? You may, you know, you, your heart races. It depends on what the source of your fear is, but it doesn't have to be a big scary bear for you to experience that fear. It can be an idea. It can be a thought of a courageous conversation that you need to have. It can be a thought of a job change, leaving a job, dealing with an issue, handling money differently, whatever can bring up those kinds of feelings. And that's fear manifested in very obvious ways. How about those that aren't so obvious? So let me just go through a few of these. And Mary, you said take a nap. I think that that's one. So we avoid, we take a nap. Not that there's anything wrong with naps. I've had my share since I've been here. But what is, or what can be, perfectionism? I have to do it right. Exhaustion, apathy, anger. I heard it said the other day that anger is, you breathe in fear, you breathe out anger. Anger and fear are very, very connected. Avoidance, arrogance, silence. You keep quiet when you should speak up. Doubt. Even depression, and I'm not talking about clinical depression, that's been in my family, I've experienced it myself, so I'm not saying that that is all just this fear-based, but it can be. Elements of depression can be fear-based. And in a lot of ways, those are just fear in costume. They're fear dressed up. And it's probably true that at one time or another, fear has held us all back. And if we had a chance to do it over again, we might choose to do it differently in spite of the fear. I can remember years ago, I went to PLU. And in high school, I was this tall, thin, awkward, not cool girl at all. Not at all. Didn't think I was attractive. My number of dates that I had would have suggested the same. And I can remember getting to PLU and finding out that one thing that I was, I had a few brain cells and I loved school. Loved it, just immersed myself in school. And I was pretty interested, I was getting very interested in sports medicine. And I had this great professor mentor who I can still remember. He came to me on a Wednesday in class. And he said, you know, I have to be at a meeting, a board meeting on Friday, and I need somebody to teach the class, and I'd really like for you to do it. I was like higher than a kite. And I can remember running home, and the first person I wanted to call was my dad. And my dad, whose name was Clank, by the way, interesting name for a man, loved my dad, but he had a pretty interesting view on life. And so I said, Dad, I called him, said, Dad, you are not going to believe what the professor wanted me to do. He wants me to teach the class. Long silence. He says, honey, you know, you need to be careful not to appear too smart. Because you might intimidate some of the boys. And I'm at the phone. I called the professor and I said, you know, I can't teach that class on Friday. That bell took me 25 years to unring. Absolutely. And was interested, didn't go to grad school. That had something to do with it. I'll tell you a little bit more about my detours. What's interesting that I do in life now, I'm a corporate trainer, and I'll tell you, my classrooms are filled with men. And I figure if you're intimidated, that's your problem. But that kept me back. And I look back, and I don't have very many regrets. That is really one of them. So as you look back, and it could be small, it could be big, but does anybody have a memory of a time when you had, you wanted to go this way, but you decided you were afraid, so you didn't? Does anybody have anything they'd be willing to share where if they had to do it over again, they might have done it differently? Anybody have anything that comes to mind? Yeah.
It's not a fear-based thing, but I was, in high school, I was not much of an athlete, so I was an actor, did drama, and went to the summer camp at WSU, and at the end of the summer camp, the junior year, they offered me a slot in the soon-to-open Edgar R. Murrow School of Broadcasting. And I was in line to have a real job to become an optometrist, which is what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a great life as an optometrist, but I always wondered.
Right. What
and it wasn't fear-based choice, it was just, you gotta get the job, you know.
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting about that is it wasn't a fear-based, like you didn't think, oh, I'm afraid to do that.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you dig more deeply, what kind of society expected of you was this. And so underneath that is I kind of have to do this thing that I'm being told to do. And that's what I'm, one of the things I want us to grapple with is that fear doesn't just show up as this fight or flight kind of thing. It is, I think, it's much more subtle than that. Anybody else have anything that they remember that they, yeah?
I think I was about 17 or something, went to take a test for a summer job, and at the end, sat down with the lady who reviewed the test, and she said to me, your test was very interesting. As long as you find a job where you don't have to think and you can use your hands, you can go.
I think she
I'm
must
not
have
very
talked
artistic.
To my dad. And so, keep going.
Well, I think it kept me from moving ahead with a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Education was a big one for years.
Yeah.
It, you know, it obviously hangs around.
Sure, it does. You know, and some of those choices are small and maybe not so consequential, and other ones live with us for years. I remember one other Tom, I've been married twice. I mean, Tom's my second marriage, and my first marriage was, on the one hand, it was ridiculous that I got married to this guy, and on the other hand, I think I needed that marriage to become who I am today. But I was 22 years old, and I think partly because I hadn't followed what I really wanted to do, I got out of college and met this guy, and 3 days later, told him I'd marry him. We got married, but we did, you know, we did end up getting married. I knew in my heart that this wasn't a good thing. But I was afraid that, you know, what if somebody else doesn't show up and all that stuff. And I was, God and my mom tried to warn me, I'll tell you. I decided to sew my own wedding dress. And so I love to sew and I was pretty good at it. And so I was sewing this beautiful velvet wedding dress, very simple, and this was about a month before the wedding. And I'm sewing, and I kind of got distracted, and I sewed right through my finger and got blood all down the front.
Oh,
and I thought, really, if I had looked more closely, what's that called, stigmata? It's like it would have said run. I just think it would have said run. And about 2 weeks before the wedding, and this was a big, lavish wedding. It cost my folks a lot of money in a community where calling a wedding off would cost way more than just the money to do it, right? And about 2 weeks before the wedding, I was in tears about something that had happened. And my mom, who was pretty quiet and sweet, came up to me and she said, you know, honey, you don't have to do this. We can call the whole thing off. And I can remember in my inside, where nobody knew, saying, oh, I wish I had the courage to say yes. And looking at her and saying, can't live without him. And marching on down the aisle. And that, you know, took up 13 years. I mean, that's a whole long history. So some of our choices based on fear last with us our whole lives. Others, we have lots of different times to kind of try it again. Okay, so earlier I said that fear can be a little dressed up. So just consider these questions. And some of them even sound a little, you know, kind of naughty, but whatever. If I didn't get caught, I would. If no one laughed at me, I would. If no one ever had to know, if failure didn't matter, if I didn't have to look like a good Christian, if I wouldn't disappoint anyone, if I didn't have to do it perfectly, or if I didn't think it was wrong, what might I do? So there's lots of different questions I think we can ask ourselves that get at, is there anything down there different than how I'm going about life? So the first time I considered really how fear limited me was at an Artist's Way conference in Taos, New Mexico. How many people are familiar with Julia Cameron's book, The Artist's Way? Her premise is that we're all created by a creator, and she does define that rather loosely, but because of that, she says our bent as human beings is to create. And really what create means is to use your gifts. You can be an optometrist and you're using your gifts. And it actually started here. We were here a number of years ago, about 1995, and my dearest friend was here for 2 weeks. She's an artist. I was here for 1 week. And she said, now I know you're not gonna go through my art class with me, but why don't you just go through this little workbook, The Artist's Way. It's a 12-week workbook. Why don't you just go through this little workbook with me? You'll go through it, I'll go through it, we can talk about it. And so it was a rainy day, it was so much this day like today was, and I take the book and I'm really just thinking, I'm just gonna go through this lovely little workbook. And I come down to the library, nobody's here. I started reading the book, and I'm telling you, it was like my life got turned inside down, upside down, and backwards. I literally walked out, walked down till nobody could see me, and shook my fist at God and said, I did not agree to do this. I did not agree to get to access this icky place inside. I didn't agree to hurt this much. I just wanted to do a nice little workbook. And yet I can tell you that I kept going and that book literally changed my life. Most people don't have my experience. They don't shake their fist at God when they read this book, but it does touch people's lives. And so not too long after I completed her 12-week program, I happened to be interviewing somebody. I was a human resources manager. And she walked into my office and I said, so hey, what have you been up to? And she said, I just got back from an Artist's Way conference in Taos, New Mexico. The minute she left my office, I got on the internet, found the next conference, bought 2 tickets, you know, put my money down for 2 people to go to this retreat, called my best friend and said, whatever you're doing in October, cancel it because I've just bought our tickets, we're going to New Mexico. So we go down to this retreat and Julia took us through these sessions, and one of the questions she asked us was, if you weren't afraid, what would you do? And she did it in the form of, if I wasn't afraid, I would. And so let me tell you 4 of the things that came up on my list. And at this time I was, like I said, human resources manager, full-time job. I said I'd quit my job, I'd write a book, I'd speak, and I would hold retreats for women on horseback. There were some other things in there, but those are the ones that I remember. Well, Tom and I just recently married. We blended a family of daughters. We'd moved into a big house with a big mortgage that needed both of our incomes. And there's this process that she has you do where you do a lot of stream of consciousness journaling. And those things kept on coming out so strongly till I literally couldn't ignore them anymore. And I can remember going up to Tom and saying, I think I need to quit my job. And lovingly he said, and do what? And I said, I don't know. I just know I need to quit my job. And bless his heart, he just looked at me and he said, well, if that's what your heart's telling you to do, then you do it and we'll figure it out. Within 3 months, we had a contract with a publisher to publish the book. Within a year, I was sent out on this big speaking tour. And we just recently have started holding, I mean, this is 10 years later now, started holding retreats for women. I haven't gotten the horses in there yet, but they're coming. But it all started with being willing to look at, if I wasn't afraid, what would I do? So, the first thing I'd like you to do is, anybody here not have paper with you? And where did we put that extra paper?
It's over there on the chair.
So, remember, this is where the inner editor needs to just take a nap. You're going to sit, right? All right. Sorry, there's another one. And I'll get more when you need it. Here we go. Okay. So this is a little bit of a twist on that, but I like the way this is phrased. The first one is write this down at the top of the page, and it says, if I had the courage, I would. You've got a couple of minutes with no editing, write down anything that comes to mind. If I had the courage, I would. Answers, some people might have a half an answer. And, you know, I think a lot of us, and I probably would put myself in this category, I don't think that I'm a fearful person. And we're all at different stages in life. And so I think our chapters in life make a difference. I think there's times when we get to a point in life where there's just not a lot. We've experienced so much, there's not a lot that we think that we fear. And yet I also think that, kind of like the example that you gave, you weren't afraid to go that way, at least you didn't feel that, and yet there was something that didn't allow you to maybe look at that perspective. And so as we're thinking about this, think about all the different areas of our lives where we can hold back from doing what we really internally would like to do. It can show up in our relationships, our work, our health, our money, change, conflict, politics, even our faith and religion. There's things that we might feel that God is calling us to do, or we're questioning parts of our faith that really we don't feel very safe talking to other people about. So let me pose the question to you a different way. So this is a new list, new heading, and the only change is, if I had the courage, I wouldn't. So at this Taos, New Mexico retreat, there was this woman who showed up, one of the participants showed up in total character and costume as Georgia O'Keeffe. Dark hat, never broke character the entire 4 days. She was this Southern gal, and the day that we were supposed to leave, Christine and I were looking for a ride to the airport. And this gal says, she said, well, I'll take you gals to the airport. She finally broke the character, right? And so we're driving, and we are in the middle of nowhere. And she's driving. I'm in the back, Christine's in the front. We are in the middle of nowhere. And she says, you know that little game that Julia had us play? She said, let's, you know, that game, if I weren't afraid, I would. She said, let's play that little game. What would you girls do? So we're kind of talking about that. And she said, you know what I'd do if I could? She said, I'd kill somebody. Looking at each other in the rear view mirror, like, can we get out of the car? What do we do? She goes, I'm like, I wouldn't want to really hurt him, and I wouldn't want it to be messy, but don't you just think that'd be fun to kill somebody sometimes? Okay, so let's set that list aside. Hopefully that didn't show up on any of your lists. So fear can seem to provoke two responses, and they're the classic two responses, whether it's emotionally or physically, and it's fight or flight. So either we get defensive and kind of put up our dukes, internally or externally, or we avoid, take a nap, flee, leave, ignore. I think there's a third choice. And so the way that I describe that is courage. And the description of courage that we use is to stand in the presence of fear. Courage is to stand in the presence of fear. Courage is the determination to do the right thing in spite of the fear. It gives us the capacity to stand tall in the midst of adversity. With courage under our belts, we can find a way to face the odds and accomplish what fear might have left undone. And I often think of courage as a gentle but mighty resolve. It doesn't have to be big. It is a gentle but mighty resolve. So listen to the difference between fear and courage. Fear stops us in our tracks. Courage calls us forward. Fear drains our spirit of hope. Courage fills us with faith. Fear keeps us silent. With courage, we find our voice. Fear makes us small. With courage, we are mighty. Fear, I love this, fear discourages us. It discourages us. Fear discourages us. I heard this great quote years ago, and I think it's some rendition from the Tao, and it says that fear and curiosity cannot coexist. And as I've thought more deeply about that, I've thought oftentimes our fear is based in the unknown. It's what might happen if. It's what other people have told us. It's I project down the line, I imagine doing this, and I see all the things that could happen, or I can't see it all. So it's really a projection. What do we do when we get curious about anything? What do?
Google it.
Yeah. We Google it, that's right. That's perfect.
Yes, we do.
We Google it. We get information. We ask questions. We inform ourselves.
Yeah, it's an opening. You open yourself to taking in new things.
Yeah, to taking in.
Receptiveness.
Yeah, yeah. And so as you gather information, one of the things I've learned is it doesn't even mean that I'm not still afraid, but at least, or that I like what I find, but at least I know what I'm dealing with, and I'm dealing with something that is more truthful, more realistic than what I'm conjuring up or imagining or thinking might happen. And so fear really, I think, brings a gift. If we're willing to really look at it, when you think of the times that you've been willing to be courageous, what's happened? What have you learned? How have you grown? I've been working with a physical therapist a little bit lately on some knee stuff, and we were talking about stretching, and she said, how long do you hold your stretch? I said, 15 to 30 seconds. She goes, no, you need to do it for a minute. She said, because here's how the brain works. She said, for the first 15 seconds, when you're stretching a muscle, the brain holds on because it senses a threat. It's trying to protect the muscle. And you've got some medical background, so if you can correct me on anything that I say. 15 to 30 seconds, the brain goes, guess this is okay, I'll let you be here, I'll let that pressure be there. 30 seconds to a minute, it says, this is an opportunity to stretch. which is why if we're willing to stand in the presence of fear and not run or resist, we begin to see the opportunities and how we might grow, how we might become more flexible. I heard this one other story, and again, I don't know if this is true, but I love this story. And it was, I don't know if it was on NPR or somebody told it to me, but it was about scientists who were doing some research on panda bears, and they were wanting to gather information. And so the scientists wanted to go and check the babies, and they knew that the moms were gone from the nest during the day, because they were out foraging for more bamboo and all of that. And so they would go to the nests to gather their information when the moms were gone, because you do not want to get between a mom and its baby, right? You know what the according to this story, you know what the baby pandas would do when the scientists would approach? They'd take their little paws and they'd go like this. It's like, if I can't see you, you're not there. And that's oftentimes what fear does to us. It's just, I just don't want to look at it, so I'm not going to. So courage, as I understand it, is a three-step process. Step number one, that's easy, it sounds really easy, three-step process, okay? Step number one, identify your fear. See if you can put a name to it. What is it? What is it that you're afraid of? I'm afraid I'm going to go broke. I'm afraid nobody's ever going to love me. I'm afraid I'm going to fail. I'm afraid I'm going to disappoint so-and-so. What is your fear? Step number two, get curious. Gather information. Read something, talk to somebody, have a conversation, ask questions, observe, whatever it takes. And then step number three, take one step over the fear toward the light at the end of your tunnel. And what the light at the end of your tunnel is where you would go if you had the courage. And it's just one step. So I had this experience a number of years ago that really taught me about this. And I mentioned that I had this 13-year fiasco of a marriage, and it was a marriage that was filled with a lot of anger, a lot of abusive action. It was not a good marriage. It wasn't a safe home. And so I can literally remember standing in the kitchen of this little house and hearing God's voice saying, you've done everything you can, it's time to leave. And so I did. I took my kids, I was living in Seattle at the time, moved in with my sister, but we determined that it probably wasn't smart for me to necessarily go and just tell my husband that I was leaving. And so one day while he was gone at work, I took my kids to my sister's house and left him a letter and had some, it was like a scene out of a movie, had some dear male friends meet me with like garbage bags, and we took the things that we needed and left the house. And about 2 weeks later, I still was not ready to see him, but I needed to get back to the house. So I called and made arrangements to go to the house when he was going to be at work. And so I drove up and walked into this little house, and there sitting on the kitchen counter were these two beautiful hand-etched wine glasses that we had gotten for a wedding present, with this little card leaning up against them that said, "Welcome home." Mm-hmm. Well, if you know anything about any kind of harsh, abusive behavior, you feel stuck. And I literally was paralyzed. I stood in that kitchen and thought, I can never leave here. And the only thing I could think of to do was to call Christine. And I did, and by the grace of God, my dear friend was there, and I explained what was happening, and she very calmly, she said, you know what I want you to do? She said, I just want you to get in your car, and I want you to drive to a phone booth. And when you get to the phone booth, give me a call. And she said, I'm not going to leave the phone. I'm going to stand right here by my phone until you call me. And I thought, I can do that. Walked down, got in the car, drove to the phone booth. Got to the phone booth, called her. She picked up the phone. She goes, now I think I want you to drive to Margie's house, your sister. And when you get to Margie's house, give me a call, and we'll figure out what to do next. Thought, I can do that. Got to Margie's house. And what I realized is that the light at the end of my tunnel at that point, my girls were 3 and 6, 3 and 7, was the light at the end of my tunnel was a safe, healthy environment for me and my kids. It was pretty straightforward, but there was a lot that had to happen. And what I realized is I didn't need to find a new house, a new job, a therapist, a new school, a new car, blah, 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 all at once. I just needed to do one thing at a time. And that's like this dramatic story, but it's that way with anything that we would like to do that that gets in the way. You know, anything where fear says, oh, you better not go there. Well, one step at a time, if it's a good place to go, we can all get there. So I'd like you to go back, and remembering that this is an exercise, I'd like you to go back to those two lists. And for the purpose of this exercise, I want you to choose one. Now, many of you will look at it and you just know which one you're going to choose. It might be sort of blinking on the page or something, but I just want you to choose one of those things on your list. And again, remembering that this is an exercise. Consider that thing the light at the end of your tunnel. And let me give you a few more, let me say a few more things before you start on this. And I'd like you to identify five possible steps that would take you closer to that. So don't do that for a minute. Let me just tell you, like mine was, one of mine was to write a book. Well, I'd never written a book, so my five steps might have been buy Brenda Ewan's book. What's the name of her book if you want to write? Or buy Anne Lamott's book, Bird by Bird, and read that. Write a description of the book that you want to read. Go to the bookstore and research books that are like that. Research agents. Talk to a good friend about what they think this idea might look like. So with whatever that thing is, I'd like you to identify five possible steps that you might take towards one of those things, that light at the end of your tunnel. So that's the first part of your exercise. For yourself, identify five possible steps that could take you closer to that light at the end of your tunnel.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Is it okay if you're a prayer for somebody else?
Sure.
Does that work?
You're going to know that better than I am.
But I mean, for I'm afraid, I'm a mom and I'm afraid for my daughters. Does this process work for that?
It could. It might be a little bit more, it might take you a little bit more time, you know, to do. Do you have any that refer to you on your list?
I do.
Yeah.
I just wondered if you could.
Yes, I think it absolutely can. And it might be one that you'd involve them in.
Okay.
You know, for purposes of this exercise, you might choose one that's more applicable specifically to you.
Okay.
Any other questions? So, five, and you're not, this is just for you. I'm not going to say, so, tell us what you're afraid of and how you're going to get there. So, five possible steps. Heather, you talked of 20 steps. Everybody's process is a little different. So everybody's going to need another clean sheet of paper. So who needs paper? Okay, so this is the second part, and this, I'm not quite sure how many times I've been able to facilitate this exercise, but this ends up, I've had a lot of feedback on this over the years, pretty powerful. I'd like you to, with that light at the end of the tunnel in mind, right, and those steps that you've identified as kind of your foundation for action, I'd like you to write a letter to yourself encouraging you to take those steps. So it's going to start out, Dear Molly, you've always wanted to write a book. So however that is, I want you to write a letter to yourself, treating yourself as if you were your very dearest friend. A letter of encouragement to take those steps. And so here's the deal. I ask you to trust me here. And that is, I'd like you to pass those to me, and I'm going to take those home with me, and sometime in the future, and I'm not, could be 2 weeks, could be 3 weeks, could be, I'm going to mail them to you. And I promise you two things. One, I've never lost a letter, and number two, I've never gotten so bored that I've steamed one open for midnight reading. I promise you. And so if you are willing to do that, if you pass them to me, I will, and it's been the stories we've heard over the years of kind of how the letter shows up just when you need it are amazing. If you would prefer to take it and mail it to yourself, you are so welcome to do that. But if you are willing for me to do that, I'd be happy to collect those and mail them to you. I've spring for the stamp, yes. I usually try to find really cool, groovy stamps to put on them too, so. So before I wrap up, what say you? Any comments from the group? Yes, sir.
One comment with regard to your domestic abuse and violence situation.
Yes.
I did 5 years on King County Crisis Line as a retired veteran training.
Yeah.
And just I did 5 years on the King County Crisis Line as a volunteer. The first 5 years I was retired. And an interesting statistic we learned in our training is it takes the average person 7 attempts to get out of an abusive relationship and move forward.
Yeah, I can imagine that. You know, it was interesting. I was raised in a pretty conservative Christian environment where the D word of divorce was somehow God just did not agree with that. And what was, you know, probably one of, you talked about our faith stories and our faith journeys and one of the scenes in my life. It was so amazing to me that when I made the choice to leave that marriage that God like walked out with me and kind of said, okay, now what are we going to do? And I made an appointment with the pastor who I just loved from this church that was pretty conservative, still is, but I just made an appointment with him and I said, you know, I need to share a story with you. And I said, I think that you, I said, one, I get why God hates divorce. I really understand that. I said, I don't think there's a divorced person that thinks that divorce is like a fun thing. I said, but I also think that there needs to be a message that really gives women a window and an understanding of really the bigger picture. And bless this man's heart, he lives with a big church. He kind of before the congregation shared kind of the essence of that conversation and said, you know, I think I've been going about this all wrong and I'd like to share some new information with you. Which was, and I think for me, one of the things that said is when we act with courage, other people are affected and other people's lives are really touched. Any other comments? Either just from the exercise or any other comments or questions or thoughts that anybody has. Yeah.
One of the things that you've talked about too is the curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we brought up a little bit of the parent-child relationship too. Well, I find that my youngest son gets in so much trouble with his curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
and he's in trouble with, you know what I mean? So it's like I instill in him a little bit of fear, but his curiosity is what, you know, he doesn't understand. I mean, he just goes into areas and,
yeah,
you know, things where I'm just going, oh, I, on one hand, I see him as curious, but on the other hand, I see that you know, making him a little afraid.
Sure.
Of his own curiosity.
You know, there was this study done, and I don't remember that I can't cite the study, but it was a credible study, where this researcher was looking at babies' behavior and babies and moms' behavior, and he would bring the women. He was at a hotel where he had a boardroom, and he'd taken all the furniture out of the boardroom except for a chair, I think, in the middle. And his instruction for the mom was to take these were crawling babies. Were to take the babies and just put them on the floor in the middle of the room. And the mom was there. So what do you think the baby did? Where did the baby head?
Oh.
No. Into the corners, to the edges. And you know what the moms did without exception? Back in the middle. Don't be curious. Don't see. Don't watch. Don't. Yeah. And so there really is a fine line between allowing that curiosity, you know, with our kids and stopping it.
Mm-hmm. I have a brand new insight. My cousin and I want to write a book on empathy and efficacy in children. And I am just the efficacy and fear, how they're, but as you talk, I was seeing one of the reasons that kids in our country don't develop the sense of efficacy, I can do it, is because as adults we're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reminded of a psychiatrist, child psychiatrist I heard that said every child has a right to a broken arm. And kids in this country don't. But I got a whole new chapter for the book.
Okay.
Thank you both.
Yeah, you know, there is, obviously we don't want to let them crawl in the freeway, but we also, when you look back on your life, how much has pain taught you? It's one of our biggest teachers, and again, we have to be careful, you know, not like, well, sure, that's a loaded shotgun, good luck with that one, but, you know, is
no,
we
can do that.
but I think that if we don't, you know, you said you're afraid for your girls, if we don't allow our kids to experience their own pain, at least to some degree, they're not going to learn. And it's that.
And it's
fine.
My problem, not theirs.
It's their, yeah. Oftentimes that fear, I can translate my fear to
them. I don't want it to be their problem, but it is frightening to raise daughters as they get to an age of, you know,
sure.
The world.
But
someone said to me one time, don't you think your daughter has a right to make mistakes? And that really helped me a lot.
Yeah, that
was her right.
Yeah. Any other comments?
Well, it's also connected. Everybody has the right to be their own person, because I feel personally responsible for what my kid did. He's still little, and he took a face plant out there, and he's got this bruised up face, so, oh my gosh, now I'm the horrible mom, but, you know, I didn't make him do that, and it's, you know, it's his scabby face, but I mean, it's not me, it's him.
And what's he going to learn from you? Probably learn things about balance and what his limits are, and, you know, all of that kind of thing.
Gravity.
Right. Yeah. Any other comments? Well, so let me close with this great quote. My dear friend is also just this amazing artist, and I don't particularly like spiders, so she made this wonderful thing for my desk with a spider on it. And it says, sometimes the thing we fear the most holds our greatest courage. Sometimes the thing we fear the most holds our greatest courage. So, maybe you anybody that would like me to mail you the letter, you can put them right up here by my coffee cup. If you want to take it with you, please feel free to do that. Anybody that's interested, tomorrow we're going to be talking about contentment and what does contentment mean and how do we maybe get a little bit more of it.